Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the. Getting a pep band. They said high school band students needed a continuation of band into college, and we listened, he said. We brought it back again this year, Estevas said of the pep band, which is in its second year on campus. I don't know how long it was on hiatus. Estevas said he has been working hard since August to recruit students, present and future, for DACC's pep band. We're at 12 members and growing, he said. I've been going to high schools and meeting the kids. I've contacted every high school band director in the county. Pep band isn't Estevas' only focus. We're developing more music classes for next semester, such as applied music theory, he said. The challenge for all colleges is how to reach the kids about music, so it's interesting. As a professional musician, I love learning about it, but I love playing it more, Estevas said. Adding that next semester, he also will be a DACC student so he can finish earning an associate degree in fine arts. I hope to get a jazz band started in the fall and set up a music recording studio so the students can learn how to record in the fall. When they come to DACC, they can learn theory, play in bands, and record the music, he said. DACC student Alejandra Limon of Hoopston, who started playing tenor saxophone in fourth grade and continued with it all through high school, said she's thrilled to be a member of DACC's pep band and noted that the group is gaining in popularity. It's a lot bigger. It doubled compared to last year, she said. DACC student Jonathan Nelson of Cayuga, Indiana, said, "Being in pep band makes me happy." DACC student Kayla Koch of Danville, who plays flute in the pep band, said, "I did this in high school, so it's nice to have that transition. They started pep band last year, and I knew I wanted to continue playing flute in college," she said. DACC student Angelina Limon of Hoopston, who plays baritone horn, said, "Being in pep band is fun. I really did miss it. And when I came here to DACC to register for classes, they told me about pep band. I told them I'm in," she said. Nacko, who will perform Saturday with the pep band, likened his presence in the pep band to that of Buzz Cassidy, who is known locally as a super fan at Schlarman and DAC sporting events, as well as at the National Junior College Athletic Association men's basketball tournament that takes place every March at DACC. "I'm the buzz of the pep band," he said. "They've got talent and they can do it without me, but I think they like me there for the support." Alejandra Limon said she appreciated Nacko's support of pep band. "It's awesome. It's cool," she said. "In high school, we were like the band nerds, so to have the president of the college support us is cool." The next article has the headline, "Snap may be out for 140,000 in state." And this is Dateline Springfield. The Trump administration is about to impose new regulations that would tighten eligibility rules for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as food stamps, in a way state officials say could cut off benefits to an estimated 140,000 Illinoisans. The new rules apply to a category of SNAP recipients ages 18 to 59, known as able-bodied adults without dependents, or ABAWDS. Currently, who meet the program's income eligibility limits are limited to 3 months of benefits during any 36-month period, unless they work at least 20 hours a week or are enrolled in a job training program. Those conditions are part of a 1996 welfare reform law passed during the Clinton administration. But the law also allows states to waive the work requirements if the applicant lives in an area marked by high unemployment or where there is a lack of sufficient jobs. The new rules, which will take effect in April, will tighten the regulations governing these waivers by limiting them to counties with unemployment rates above 6%. It is one of several changes to SNAP eligibility being implemented or considered by the Trump administration. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, which administers the program, said in a document published Wednesday that about half of all able-bodied adults receiving SNAP live in areas that have received waivers, quote, despite low unemployment levels across the majority of the country, close quote. The strong economy is creating opportunities for all, U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue said during a telephone news conference Wednesday. Now is the time for us to engage with this subset of SNAP participants so that they can know the dignity of work and the lasting transformation that it provides. But Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker blasted the new rules, calling them cruel and suggesting they are being enacted for other political purposes. President Trump is now resorting to the ugliest possible tactics to distract the American people from his impeachment and gin up support from the far right, denying food to the most eligible, the most vulnerable people in our society, Pritzker said in an email statement. This is cruel, and my administration has fought him at every turn. USDA estimates the rule change will make about 668 people nationwide ineligible for SNAP, resulting in an estimated $5.5 billion savings over 5 years. Megan Powers, spokeswoman for the Illinois Department of Human Services, said about 140,000 people in this state would lose eligibility. Although she added, the agency has been working to find other ways to extend eligibility to those individuals. Many SNAP participants face serious barriers to employment, such as mental illnesses, substance use disorders, justice involvement, and significant physical limitations, and would not be able to immediately meet the work requirements, she said in an email statement. IDHS has been working for months to appropriately exempt any individuals with these barriers so they do not need to meet the work requirements. However, we also recognize that some of our customers can and want to work. To this end, IDHS has also engaged in a robust effort to prepare for this rule change so that we can help as many SNAP participants as possible find employment and training that would meet the work requirement. And now for the obituaries. And the first is for Dorothy Alice Skinner, 71, of Perrysville, Indiana, who died on December 3rd in Lafayette, Indiana. Funeral services will be at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time Monday, December 9th, at Shelby Funeral Home, Covington, with Pastor Keith Klausner officiating. Visitation will be from 3 p.m. Eastern Time until time of service. Private burial at a later date in Lower Mound Cemetery. And the next is for Rebecca Ann, quote-unquote, Becky Timmons, Dateline Huntley. Rebecca Ann Becky Timmons of Huntley, formerly of Hoopston, died at 5:08 on Sunday, December 1st. Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street in Hoopston, is in charge of arrangements. And the next is for Marcus Sean Lisby, 37, of Danville, who died on November 29th. Homegoing services will commence at noon Saturday, December 7th at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue, Danville, Illinois. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until the time of the services. Pastor Daryl Hunter will be the officiant. Pastor Thomas Miller will be the eulogist. There will be a public viewing from 1 to 5 p.m. December 5th. At Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. And the next is for East E. Wayne Wynn of Oakwood, who died on December 2nd, 2019. A celebration of life service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 7th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Officiating will be the Reverend Glenn Corbley. Burial will be in Pleasant Grove in Oakwood. Visitation will be just prior to the service from 9 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Memorial donations in Wayne's name may be made to the Wounded Warrior Project or the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. And the next is for Ronald Dean Wagle, 70, who died on December 4th, 2019. A celebration of life will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 7th at St. James United Methodist Church with the Reverend Randall L. Robinson and Pastor Greg Boylan officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, December 6th at St. James UMC. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you help to honor Ron's life with contributions to the building fund at St. James UMC. And the next is for May Bell Richards, 83, of Danville, who died on November 29th. A celebration of life will be at 11 a.m. today, Friday, December 6th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Pastor James Blue officiated. Burial was in Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation was yesterday, 10 to 11 a.m., at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made to the donor's choice. And the next is for Betty A. Haas, H-A-A-S, 92, of Danville, who died on December 2nd, 2019. A celebration of life will be at 10 a.m. Monday, December 9th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Minister Dan Daniel will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Sunday, December 8th at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made in Betty's name to Second Church of Christ in Danville. And now we're back to news. And the first article has the headline, Police to Show Their Work. Applicants sought for Citizens Academy. Dateline Danville. So just how accurate are those popular crime shows? The Danville Police Department would like to show you. The department will host Citizens Police Academy for 8 Thursdays, 6 to 9 p.m., January 16th to March 5th, 2020. We're going to give them an inside look at the police department and how the judicial system works, said Officer Danielle Lawallen, who is in charge of putting the classes together. Lawallen is not teaching any of the classes herself, but has put together the list of speakers, which will include Police Chief Christopher Yates, Sheriff Pat Hartshorn, and Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey. The Academy was designed to build a better understanding between citizens and the police through education and positive interaction, and will be conducted at the Public Safety Building 2 East South. Class topics will include such things as patrol operations / traffic enforcement, criminal investigations, crime scene investigation or CSI, emergency response unit or SWAT, legal issues, canine, gang awareness and shooting investigations, drug enforcements, and crime stoppers. Students will take a tour of the Vermilion County Jail at the Public Safety Building, hosted by the Sheriff's Department, and be provided an opportunity to ride on patrol with an on-duty Danville police officer. However, the department will require class members to sign a waiver of liability as an acknowledgement that a ride-along can be dangerous. Risks include, but are not limited to, bodily injury, physical and emotional disability, death, and property damage, the waiver reads. We'll discuss it, Llewellyn said. Each officer can do it differently. If they stay in the car, you stay in the car. If they say you can get out, you need to stay right next to them. It's the officer's preference. Times for the ride-along are subject to change, but as of now, they will be offered in 4 blocks for a 24-hour period in hopes that the participants can participate on their own schedule. She did suggest that some blocks will be more active than others and that the student should consider that when picking a time. There are no costs or fees to participate, but seats are limited. Llewellyn said she's received about 10 applications already, with only 20 spots available. Applicants will be given a background check. To apply, visit www.cityofdanville.org or at the front desk of the PSB. For questions, contact Officer Llewellyn at dlewellyn@danvillepd.org or call her at 217-431-2250. Students are going to be meeting face-to-face with people behind the badge and department head, she said. You don't get to meet those people on the street. And the next article has the headline, Hoopston Council OKs Tax Levy. Dateline Hoopston, City Council members unanimously passed the tax levy for fiscal year ending April 30th, 2020 of $837,385 at Tuesday's council meeting. Questions were raised at the public hearing prior to the council meeting regarding the reasons the levy was needed. Alderman Bill Goodwine said the levy was needed to get the police pension fund back on track. It will take at least 20 years for the pension fund to be fully funded, he answered. Don Jackson asked how much the fund was underfunded. According to Goodwine, the police pension fund is underfunded to the tune of $2.5 million. Goodwine said this amount was based on the Illinois Department of Insurance that says 80% of officers were married and spouses were at least 3 years younger than the officer. One Hoopston officer's wife is 14 years younger, said Goodwine. That hurt us quite a bit, he said. Goodwine added that the police pension funds were in CDs at the local banks and bank interests were low. Jackson asked whether any of the dispatch fee of $9 went to the police pension fund, to which Goodwine replied that dispatch fees don't pay for dispatch. Dispatch costs $400,000, and the dispatch fee brings in about $237,000. The tax levy also includes the city park, city garbage and disposal, emergency services and disasters, payroll withholding, liability insurance fund, workman's compensation insurance fund, unemployment insurance funds, fire and police protection funds, road and bridge funds, city audit funds, and ambulance funds. In other council business, council members learned the leaf pickup has a couple of weeks left remaining. Alderman Jeff Wise thanked the employees from the Parks Department for their continued help with the cleanup. The next Hoopston City Council meeting will begin at 7 p.m. December 17th at City Hall. And now we have the community briefs. And the first one is from Danville with the headline, Cookies for Sale. First Presbyterian Church, 100 North Franklin Street, plans its cookie walk for 9 a.m. to noon Saturday. There also will be other items for sale, such as jams, jellies, pies, and snack food. In addition, there will be puzzles, books, and gently used Christmas decorations for purchase. Proceeds go to the Christmas Food Boxes program, and that will be held at Culver's at 3210 North Vermillion. No, I think I have it wrong. That'll be at the church. The next community brief will be held at Culver's at 3210 North Vermillion. And it has the headline, Proceeds Help CASA. Culver's at 3210 North Vermillion Street will donate a portion of its sales 5 to 8 p.m. Monday to raise funds for CASA, court-appointed special advocates of Vermillion County. And the next is from Covington, Indiana. And the title is Cookie Walk Set. A cookie walk will be 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday at Benson Chapel United Methodist Church, 3 miles west of Covington. Cookies, candy, and cheese spread will be available. And the next is from Fairmount. And from the title is Bazaar Set at the Faith Church, 107 East Van Street, plans its Christmas bazaar at and farmers market at 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. Gifts, crafts, baked goods, books, and jewelry will be available. Breakfast and lunch from Hooligans to Go. Anne from Westville has the title library program. It's a Charlie Brown Christmas at the Westville Library at 10 a.m. Saturday. Children are invited to enjoy a story, craft, game, and other surprises. Children under the age of 10 must have an adult with them. Call the library at 267-3170 to register. And now, an article from Springfield with the headline, Illinois Harvest Behind Schedule. Oh boy. Dateline Springfield. As the month of December arrived, many Illinois farmers are still working to harvest their corn and soybeans. The state's two largest field crops, and agriculture officials are anticipating one of the smallest harvests in recent years. As of November 24th, only about 88% of corn acres in Illinois had been harvested, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture, down from 100% at the same time last year. Soybean harvesting was 95% complete, down from 99% a year ago. That delay is the result of historic rainfall in the spring that drenched many parts of the state, preventing farmers from getting seeds in the ground, in some cases until as late as June. Officials at the Illinois Department of Agriculture say the final official numbers for the 2019 growing season won't be known until early January. But Rodney Weinzerl, executive director of the Illinois Corn Growers Association, said all indicators point to a below average year. Our acres of corn this year was the lowest we've had probably since the 1980s, Weinzerl said in a phone interview. Just because of that corn that was prevented from being planted just because of such wet conditions. Weinzerl said, Illinois farmers planted about 1.1 million fewer acres of corn this year compared to a normal year, and there was also a big drop-off in soybean acres. So it's just something that we've not experienced before, he said. In addition to fewer acres planted, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is projecting that each acre will produce less this year than in the recent past, about 179 bushels per acre this year, down from 210 bushels in 2018, which is a record for Illinois. Last year, Illinois harvested roughly 11 million acres of corn, according to USDA estimates. Those acres yielded about 2.7 billion bushels, which at an average price of $3.62 per bushel generated $8.2 billion in farm income. Soybean farmers harvested 10.5 million acres, producing nearly 667 million bushels at $8.74 per bushel. That generated about $6.3 billion in income. Most farmers who left acres unplanted this year had insurance coverage, but those policies only cover farmers for their input costs, such as the seeds and fertilizers that went unused. They do not cover farmers for the loss of income or the cost of land for farmers who lease acreage from other landowners. So farmers that rent ground would still have an overall loss, Weinzerl said. But it's like any other insurance. It's meant to kind of allow you to be able to farm again next year. A spokeswoman for the Illinois Department of Agriculture said final numbers for the 2019 growing season are due to be released January 10th. A separate report will be released in February detailing the state's first year of legal hemp production. And the next is an editorial with the headline, To Get a Teacher, Grow a Teacher. And this is from the Arlington Heights Daily Herald from Thursday. If cost or short supply make it hard to get something you need, you make it or grow it yourself. That philosophy, familiar to Depression-era elders, might seem old-fashioned today. But it's the approach Northwest Suburban High School District 214 is taking to get highly qualified teachers into the pipeline in the face of a shortage. District 214 has devised a program that works for the school district and its communities, makes sense for the would-be teachers among its students, and has attracted grants to cover some of the costs, plus seed money for schools that want to emulate District 214. How's that for a trifecta? District 214 recruits high schoolers into its educator prep program for 3 years of coursework and internships in the schoolroom in partnership with local elementary districts and special ed programs, as the Daily Herald's Madhu Krishnamurthy wrote this week. Students who finish the program are guaranteed placement in education degree programs at Northeastern Illinois University and National Lewis University. The first students will graduate from college in 2 years. More than 100 District 214 students did teacher internships last year, and about 1,000 students are taking the education courses. District 214 hopes for a future payoff in solid new hires. While Illinois' teacher shortage is most acute downstate, teachers of color and teachers in special ed, English language learning, and STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, are in short supply everywhere. How are the eventual new teachers lured back to their home district? While in college, they are guaranteed student teaching placements at District 214 or its partner schools. And according to Stephanie Bonchero, Education Program Director for the Joyce Foundation, research shows most teachers work near where they grew up. Growing teachers in the community where they are probably going to live is a good idea, she said. Career prep in high school is a growing trend that we support for many students. Programs that give high schoolers college credit, or at least the confidence that they've chosen the right path for themselves, can help keep costs under control. Among the 8 communities launching programs similar to District 214's are Indian Prairie Unit District in Aurora and Naperville and Plainfield Unit District 202, with funding from the Joyce Foundation and the Illinois P20 Council. We'll watch for the dividend for future teachers and future students. And now, some short questions and answers. The head of the column is Ask the Fraud Team. I got a call from someone saying they were from Medicare and needed to confirm my number to send out my new plastic card. I thought cards were only paper. The answer, you are spot on. Medicare has only paper cards and is not sending out new plastic cards. This is a scammer trying to steal your Medicare number to bill for fraudulent charges. Remember, Medicare will never call you out of the blue and asking to verify your information. And the next one, I want to freeze my credit, but I hear it affects my credit score. Does it? No, that's a common misconception. A credit freeze does not affect your credit score. It is a great tool that protects you from ID theft by making it more difficult for criminals to open up credit in your name. And this has been Lois Pausch reading to you the Vermilion County News Plus Extras for Friday, December 6, 2019. I look forward to reading with you again soon.